Okay, well, thank you for joining me this morning. As you can see, I'm not Dr. Fran Pierce. I'm, in fact, Steve Young. Dr. Pierce is actually busy with some other meetings this morning, so I'm going to present this data that we've been working on. This is a collaborative a research project between Washington State University and USDA ARS, working in Prosser, Washington. And we also have a collaborative site in Pendleton, Oregon. But what we've been doing on this study is looking at how the production of biofuel crops impact soil processes. And I'm not going to talk about the soil processes today. I'm going to talk about how we've measured the difference in net primary productivity levels on bioenergy production. And I'm going to talk about the four different crops and some other effects of those, and then we'll possibly make some inferences on ethanol production level as well. So biofuels, as you all are well aware of, there's some different sources for biofuels. They can come from grain crops, starch to ethanol. As we all know, there's several biodiesel crops. In this case, soybeans are an example. Sugar ethanol crops, sugar beets potentially are a source of biofuels, as well as some other sugar crops. And then cellulosic energy crops, wood, and in this case, miscanthus, another high-yielding cellulosic crops. So we've got several different crops that are potential biofuel sources, but today I'm going to talk about the grain and cellulosic energy crops, specifically switchgrass, wheat, and then corn. And what we've been looking at is the production of these crops, as well as the removal of these crops as agricultural residues for the production of biofuels. So when I talk about net primary productivity, it can be defined as a net flux of carbon from the atmosphere into the green plants per unit time. And this is a rate process. So we're talking about this occurring over a period of days, weeks, years. And in our case, we're altering, or in any case, you can alter NPP by the ET, or adding irrigation, which then also has an effect on yields, which if you're working with an annual crop, you can alter the seeding rates. And in a perennial crop, you can, and annuals, you can then alter the nutrients. So these are the two things, or the three things, that we were focusing on in this study. And our objectives were to provide a quantitative assessment of the biomass production, as well as the crop residue removal over three net primary productivity levels. And this table here shows our target net primary productivity levels that we were shooting for. And for the corn, for our low, it was 12 to 15, medium was 18 to 22, and the high was 35 to 40 megagrams per hectare. And wheat, 5 to 8, 10 to 15, 25 to 30. And our switchgrass, which also includes a polyculture, which I didn't mention, but in addition to growing switchgrass in a monoculture, we also have a polyculture of warm season grasses that includes switchgrass. And our yield goals for that crop was 4 to 8, 9 to 11, and 20 to 25. And so these yield goals are on the high end, especially for the corn and the wheat, and in fact switchgrass, but we're putting a lot of energy into producing these, and that energy is in the form of water, irrigation, as well as nutrients. So to give you an idea of where this research is being conducted, this is in the Columbia Basin of the Pacific Northwest, and the precipitation pattern in that area generally in January, February, March is when we get precipitation, and then it tapers off in the summer, and then we get a little more in the fall. It's about a 9-inch annual rainfall, but the temperature obviously during the summer increases to about 30, on the average 30 degrees Celsius. So hot summers, dry summers, but moisture during the winter and the fall. But so obviously this is not a desirable place to grow switchgrass under dryland conditions, but in our case we can add irrigation and make up for that lack of moisture. So as I mentioned previously, the crops that we were looking at is field corn, winter wheat, switchgrass, and then a warm season polyculture. These were put in small plots. They were 30 by 36 feet, so not huge plots, but yet still pretty representative. We had biomass removal or non-removal. As you're aware of, switchgrass is a perennial. So in our non-removal site, we have not harvested the switchgrass at all. And then we had the three levels of net primary productivity with irrigation, fertilizer, and seeding regimes. So this is a look at the irrigation that we used, and it's just broken down between 2008 and 2009 for corn, wheat, and I'm going to refer to this as switchgrass. We were trying to keep up with the total evapotranspiration in these crops at our high net primary productivity level, and so you can see that we've maintained that in the across these high treatments, except for the wheat. We had an issue with the wheat that we didn't get the irrigation on this last year, but the year before we did pretty well with it. And then as a percentage of ET, we decreased the irrigation to hit our net primary productivity levels. For the nutrients, again, trying to keep these yield goals of 12 to 15 all the way up to 35 to 40 in corn. We are trying to hit these yield goals in wheat and then the yield goals in our switchgrass. And so we added nitrogen in these different regimes, increased seeding rates in the corn, and then also did the same for the wheat as well as the switchgrass. Our first year we didn't add any nitrogen. It was a year after it had been established. This last year we added 112 kilograms all the way up to 448 kilograms, which was split between the two harvests. So the harvest dates that we took our samples from occurred on June 30th and October 6th, which is typically the time to harvest switchgrass. Wheat, we harvested in the 1st of July. And then corn, we harvested the end of September. So this gives you kind of an overview of our site. We've got the plots right next to each other, and then we've got a tall fescue in between, as well as the irrigation system. So I'm going to show you some yield results, and we're going to look at the total biomass production, looking at corn and wheat, and the grain as well as the stover. Or in the case of wheat, that would be the straw. Switchgrass and polyculture is just the biomass. And then I just did a simple statistics with one standard error between the net primary productivity regimes. So for field corn, again, I want to emphasize this is probably an overestimation of what we got. And these, again, this is small plot research, so there's some numbers that we need to deal with here. Obviously a 60 megagram per hectare yield is quite high, but the important trend I want you to see is that it's we were in some ways able to establish that difference in our high, medium, and low, and then we also got some good differences between the grain and the stover. So we're over our max or over our high in the high total, But if we look at just the grain in the stove, we're probably more in that range. And that was for 2008. For 2009, we had a similar situation. This year we didn't get quite the separation here, so we need to determine how to work on that medium net primary productivity level to get it so we get more of a linear pattern. If we look at winter wheat, in our high treatment, we had about 8 megagrams per hectare of grain in addition to 4 megagrams per hectare of straw. So we're below our high productivity level goal, but our medium and our low are pretty well within the range. For 2009, we were lower in yields, and we had an issue of the irrigation system, which I mentioned previously, but we did see that pattern of a linear decline in net primary productivity levels. In our polyculture and switchgrass, and this is the first year after establishment, so this is the first full season, our total yield in dry megagrams per hectare was about 12, and pretty similar between the poly and the switchgrass. I need to mention that switchgrass in a mix, it almost dominated the plot. So it was about 80% a mix, or 80% switchgrass in these polyculture plots. We didn't see the good decrease in productivity in 2008, but in 2009 we saw a better pattern of decreasing productivity. And so this will potentially be something to watch, especially as we go forward with continual production on these sites. So I want to just touch on a little bit, I got a minute or two here to touch on ethanol production. In the study, we also compared this potentially to how much biomass can produce a certain amount of ethanol. This is some work by Kerstetter and Lyons, just giving you a breakdown of the carbon in the different products. So looked at some of the equations that are published in the literature and then applied these to the yields that we were getting. And the rates for corn are obviously pretty inflated. I need to look at those again. That's just to show you that the differences in the between the treatments are there. For the wheat, about 1,400 liters per hectare, and then we're seeing an increase as we increase in our NPP, and also for the switchgrass as well. So between the 2 years, we see an increase in this ethanol equivalent, and I'll go quickly to the conclusions here. In 2009, switchgrass did better than corn. Sorry, switchgrass and corn were better in 2009 due to the cooler spring and the hot summer, while the wheat remained constant. And as I mentioned earlier, this is due to some deficit irrigation that happened earlier this year. The reason switchgrass does better than corn is probably because of the life history, the biomass anyway, and that need to check on that, but that that's an issue there. And then the ethanol, corn outperforms the switchgrass and the polyculture on the low NPP due to the establishment of switchgrass and the grain contribution of corn. And then this is just the first full season of production from switchgrass. So yield potentials probably haven't been reached for switchgrass, the others possibly, but there's some different things, different factors that need to be kind of adjusted to work this out. So with that, I'd like to thank the USDA CRES for this support of this project, as well as the Center for Precision Agriculture that supported the site. So I don't know if I have any time for questions, but we had eastern gamma grass, we had big blue stem, we had, there were two others that are common warm season grasses. do you remember what the others? Okay, so, yeah.
Good. Let's give up. Let's pick it up. Done that one.